This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It is my pleasure to have our good friend Ryan Anderson with us on the program. Ryan is the William E. Simon Fellow at the Heritage Foundation and editor of Public Discourse, the online journal of the Witherspoon Institute. Ryan previously served as assistant editor of First Things, and his writings have appeared in the Harvard Journal of Law and Public Policy, the Weekly Standard, National Review, and the New Atlantic. Ryan is with us today to talk about his new book, Truth Overruled, the Future of Marriage and Religious Freedom. We'll be talking with Ryan about where we go from here after the U.S. Supreme Court's recent decision, which legalized same-sex marriage across the nation. Ryan, welcome back to Family Policy Matters.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you, and we appreciate all your work so much. Ryan, as I mentioned, the U.S. Supreme Court, of course, has forced the redefinition of marriage on every state in the nation, and proponents of same-sex marriage claim the debate is officially over. But you argue in your new book, Truth Overruled, that the debate has only just begun. Why is the debate over marriage not over from your perspective, and why is it healthy for us as a society to continue to discuss and debate this issue of marriage?
Sure. You know, the main theme of my new book is that the pro-marriage movement is in the same exact spot that the pro-life movement was in 42 years ago after Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade didn't end the discussion about abortion, and one ruling from Justice Anthony Kennedy and four liberal judges doesn't end the debate about marriage. You know, a 5-4 Supreme Court decision doesn't settle the issue of what marriage is and why marriage matters, nor does it accurately say that what the consequences of redefining marriage will be. So one of the reasons that I wrote this book was that it's important that Americans understand that what the Supreme Court just did wasn't correct. There's nothing in the Constitution that requires a redefinition of marriage, and that five unelected judges shouldn't be allowed to make marriage policy for our entire nation and allow that ruling to go uncontested. And so we're now in the same spot that pro-lifers found themselves in a generation ago, and it's up to you and me and our listeners right now to bear witness to the truth about marriage so that we can rebuild a strong marriage culture.
Well, Ryan, one of the important points that you make in your book is that the redefinition of marriage actually weakens marital norms. Give us some examples of how same-sex marriage will harm the institution of marriage as we know it.
Sure. You know, the argument here is that same-sex marriage is a symptom of the larger underlying problem. It's not as if gay marriage somehow causes our problem, is that gay marriage is one of the consequences of a bad ideology about marriage. And this bad ideology, many heterosexuals have bought into. It's the ideology that comes out of the 60s, that comes out of the sexual revolution. And it more or less says that marriage is simply about consenting adult romance, and consenting adults should do whatever consenting adults want to do. It redefines marriage, and it furthers that redefinition by saying that marriage is simply about the desires of adults, not the needs or the rights of children. And this legal redefinition of marriage, which Anthony Kennedy did a few weeks ago, could only take place after a cultural redefinition of marriage. And so if you think about the past 40 or 50 years, the rise of the hookup culture, the rise of premarital sex, non-marital childbearing, the spike in divorce rates, all of those problems that heterosexuals caused led to the further redefinition of marriage. And all of that will further weaken marital norms because they don't make sense. Monogamy, exclusivity, permanency, if marriage is simply about consenting adult romance. Consenting adults can consent to have an open relationship or a closed relationship. They can consent to have a permanent relationship or a temporary relationship. They can consent to have a monogamous relationship or a polyamorous or a polygamous relationship. If you want to explain marital norms, all of those are based on the union of a man and a woman, a husband and a wife, a mother and a father. So, for example, one of the things that I point out in the book is that right now, 40% of all Americans are born to single mothers. 50% of Hispanics and over 70% of African Americans are born to single moms. Gays and lesbians didn't cause that problem. Heterosexuals created that problem because they bought into a bad ideology. The question now is, how do we make progress on that? How do we say that fathers are essential when Anthony Kennedy has redefined marriage to make fathers optional? Because the message of same-sex marriage is that men and women are interchangeable, therefore mothers and fathers are replaceable. But we know that's not true, and so the law is going to be teaching a falsehood, which makes bearing witness to the truth and passing on the truth to the next generation that much more challenging, and yet it's still essential that we do it.
Well, it certainly is. Now, Ryan, of course, we know that marriage is not just about the man and woman who are married, but it's also about the children and even about unborn children. I know that you warn in your book that the redefinition of marriage will put unborn children at risk. Explain that for us, what you mean that the redefinition of marriage will put unborn children at risk. How can same-sex marriage affect the unborn?
Sure. You know, you could think of the problem of abortion in the United States as one of both supply and demand. And so we know on the supply side, there's a huge problem with Planned Parenthood. They're the suppliers of abortion. But what about the demand for abortion? One of the major factors leading to that is the breakdown of the family. And the Supreme Court's ruling to redefine marriage only takes us further down that road, and as a result, it puts more unborn children at risk. Because redefining marriage redefines parenthood. And the best protectors of unborn children are a strong marriage culture and people who take chastity seriously. But Anthony Kennedy's vision of marriage reduces marriage to mere contract, and so it makes a culture of chastity and of marriage harder to foster. And what I explain in this book, Truth Over Rule, is that without a strong marriage culture, we'll never have a strong pro-life culture. But it also, there's another way, a more distinctive way that same-sex marriage poses these risks, because same-sex couples, now that they're declared the same as married mothers and fathers, will want to use assisted reproductive technologies to have children of their own. And what we know about assisted reproductive technologies with sperm donors and egg donors and surrogate wombs is that these create many embryos that will then be frozen or destroyed. That the use of assisted reproductive technologies with the sperm donor, the egg donor, the surrogate womb leads to the creation of children, embryonic children, who will then be destroyed, and it deliberately deprives those children of a relationship with either a mother or a father. You know, they will be created to have two moms or two dads, but not a mom and a dad, and many of them will spend the rest of their lives either in a freezer or being destroyed as biomedical waste. And that's another problem of how redefining marriage redefines parenthood, and as a result, redefines the status of these children.
One of the important points you make in your book, Truth Overruled, is that the man-woman definition of marriage is based on human nature, not on what some people have claimed is an anti-gay animosity. How do we continue to make our case for the truth about marriage as believers without being labeled as bigots, or is that even possible?
Oh, it's definitely possible. I mean, what we need to be doing here is explaining why our beliefs are reasonable. One of the things that the pro-life movement did would show that even if you're pro-choice, even if you are in support of abortion, you can understand why a pro-lifer is against abortion, and therefore you might not be willing to have the government coerce them. So what we need to do is help explain to our secular liberal neighbors what we believe about marriage, because if they can at least understand what we believe about marriage, they might be less inclined to have the government coerce us and penalize us and violate our freedoms. So what I do in this book is I argue on the basis of philosophy, social science, and constitutional law. I make secular arguments so that even if a secular liberal reader disagrees with me, they can at least understand why I believe what I believe. So they'll be less likely to coerce me, less likely to use the government to try to penalize me or shut me down. I think that's what all of us need to be doing. We need to be helping our neighbors who disagree with us at least see the rationality behind our beliefs, and how we don't pose any harm or any threat to the community when we live out our beliefs, and therefore the government shouldn't be coercing us.
Well, Ryan, I think another thing that supports that conclusion, too, is another thing that you highlight in your book, and that is the voices of adults who were raised by same-sex parents and are speaking out about the harms that they have experienced as a result of being raised in that sort of an environment. Share with us, if you would, one of those stories.
Sure. You know, it's chapter 7 of the book. I go through the most recent social science on same-sex parenting. What do we know about that? And what we do know about that is all of the most recent rigorous, large, random, representative samples that have been conducted show that children do best when raised by their married biological mothers and fathers. I then complement the social science with personal testimonies. And here I think that we're just following the pro-life script of having women speak for themselves about abortion and how women harms both and how abortion harms both unborn human life and the women involved was a very powerful message for the pro-life movement. In the same way that there are now several adults who were once children of same-sex couples. And they've spoken out saying, we love our two moms, but having two moms was not the same thing as having a mom and a dad. Several of these now adult children of same-sex couples used to be in favor of gay marriage. They were in favor of gay marriage because they were like, yeah, well, I love my two moms or I love my two dads and I want them to have marriage rights. And they said it was only when they got married themselves and they saw how their husbands interacted with their children that they realized that fathers and mothers weren't interchangeable. And they said, it's only watching my father, my husband, be a father to my children that I fully realized what I had missed out on by not having a father. Katie Faust, I tell her story in this book. I also tell the story of Heather Barwick. I can't remember which one, but one of those two women used the phrase that same-sex marriage institutionalizes missing parents. That what same-sex marriage does is it creates an institution for that missing mom or that missing dad. And that up until now, we had never viewed adoption or single parenting or divorce as ideals. We recognize that sometimes because of human frailty, because of the limitations of human beings, we couldn't always reach the ideal and that we would need to have remedial institutions. But no one suggests adoption or single parenting or divorce and remarriage are the ideals that we should strive for. They were saying that with same-sex marriage, we were actually creating a new ideal that all a child needs are two parents, not a mom and a dad. When people hear Katie, when people hear Heather, they're very powerful voices, which is why they've been attacked so much in the public square by the gatekeepers of the LGBT movement. They've tried to silence these voices. In the same way that we see women tried to silence pro-life women. You know, they tried to say that Barbara Boxer and Nancy Pelosi speak for all women on the abortion issue. They tried to silence the voices of feminists for life, the Susan B. Anthony list, Silent No More. And so that's why I devote a chapter to telling these stories, because people need to hear these voices.
Well, I think that's so important, and these personal stories are so compelling. And, you know, one thing that I've often heard is that you can debate statistics, you can debate positions, but you cannot debate an individual's personal experience, their life experience. And these life experiences are so key in helping to spread the truth about the importance of marriage as the union of one man and one woman, and why that complementary union is so vital to the raising of children in the optimum environment. So certainly there was no mistake in that design that God intended. Well, Ryan, unfortunately, we're nearly out of time for this week. Where can our listeners go to get a copy of your new book, Truth Overruled?
Sure, just go to Amazon.com. You can get the Kindle edition. You can pre-order the print edition, which will be available at the end of August. It's also available at Barnes & Noble. It's available at the iTunes store if you want to get the iBook for your iPhone or iPad. So it's available wherever books are sold.
And if our listeners want to learn more about you, Ryan, and your work, your writings, your research, where can they go to avail themselves of those really important and valuable resources?
The easiest way is to do a Google search for my name, Ryan Anderson and the Heritage Foundation, or go to heritage.org and find my author page there.
Great. Well, we have benefited so much from your wisdom on this issue and on the issue of religious liberty, and we're so appreciative of that. And Ryan, I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of what I know is an extremely busy schedule to be with us today on Family Policy Matters. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Before we close, I'd like to invite you to follow the North Carolina Family Policy Council on Facebook. Just log in and find us at ncfamily.org. Again, at ncfamily.org. Be sure to like us when you visit. In addition, for instant updates on pro-family news of interest, follow us on Twitter at ncfamily.org. Again, that's at ncfamily.org.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.